Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Convinced me to stay, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. My name's Marcus Speller and Jim Campbell's here.
Hello.
And Luke Moore is here.
All right.
What else do we need? Welcome, everybody. Welcome. It's lovely to have you here. It's another week where we talk about the footballing action. There were tons of goals in the Premier League. Some matches were very one-sided, of course, ladies and gentlemen.
There were tons of goals in one game in particular.
Yeah.
A game which I thought could have gone either way.
It could have gone either way.
Who could have predicted such a thing?
Yeah.
Watford's biggest ever loss in the top flight. This is the game, of course, that one of our number bet money for charity that Manchester City would either draw or lose the game at Watford. We talked up Watford in the last show. Of course, we said Silva's a good coach. I did question Luke's bet. When he said the bet, I said, no, he's going for it. And I like that. And I like the fact that you went for the perfect hat-trick, Luke. Basically, what happened was you'd have a tap-in with your right foot, You nodded in with your head. The ball's come to you. You could have had a touch and slotted into the corner. You thought, bicycle kick.
Yeah.
And you missed the ball.
And it would have been shit off for it.
Into the face of charity.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Well, Manchester City, my goodness.
The best thing I can say about it is that I thought Watford were okay for the first 25 minutes.
For the first 25, not much wrong.
I'm also subscribing to the Marco Silva school of thought, which says that the first goal was offside.
Yeah.
And then
the third.
Yeah, and who knows how the game could have gone. Yeah,
in a game with such tight margins, you just don't know, do you?
I mean, a 6-goal margin isn't that tight, but I take the point. It was disappointing. I was having a lovely day out with my wife, and I did glance upon the score and thought, oh God, 3-0 down at half time, there's no coming back from this. But you know, Watford have been good so far this season, and there's no shame in losing to Man City at home, but the way they sort of capitulated and let it get to them was very disappointing. As you can imagine, the Twitter mentions went through the roof. But
if a lot of activity.
Sometimes you fly too close to the sun.
Yeah,
you know, the wax on your wings melts.
Do you agree with Luke that there's no shame in getting beaten by Manchester City? Looking at that Watford result, there is absolutely no shame at all in your heaviest defeat in the top
four. No, I didn't say that.
I asked Jim.
No, I didn't say
I
that.
I asked Jim.
I need to step in.
All right.
There's no shame in losing at home to Man City, is what I said.
Yeah.
I said, but the way in which they capitulated was fairly sad to see.
Yeah, I was misquoting you.
Yeah. It's fake news. Live fake news, that was. Actually, I mean, it's a fair point, isn't it? Because the thing is, Watford are set up to attempt to make things tough for that sort of team. And then if it suddenly starts going wrong, you haven't really got anywhere to go. And City are so good at exploiting that space. They're so, so fast. Guardiola's been talking about how they're getting better at the short passes and the fullbacks are giving him what he wants now. We didn't see this from them so much last season compared to what evidently he wanted from his team. And they are looking a lot more... They're closer to the Barcelona team he had than the Bayern Munich team he's had from what we've seen. And they just kill you. They just absolutely kill you if they start to get on top.
Guardiola was looking very relaxed and quite pleased, and one of his quotes started with, "It was so good."
Yeah.
And I like that.
The standards he sets himself. He can only be happy if he's thrashed someone 6-0 away.
Well, I mean, Watford essentially just didn't see them for dust after they scored the first goal. I mean, and I do question how Watford reacted to that first goal. I suspect one or two of their players, because that first goal was offside. I'm not letting that go.
It could have been so different.
But if you look at the replay, a couple of the Watford players are looking along the line, and I think they know he was offside. And I just think they reacted very badly to that, because I think 3 minutes later Aguero scored again, and after that it was game over.
You can't just chalk a game off as being unfair, can you?
Luke's point up, you know, goals change games.
Massively.
You know, and all six of those goals changed the game every time one went
in.
You know, it made the
huge bearing on the result.
There is a modicum of truth. You know, obviously goals do change games, and I understand. But I think on the day, Man City was so
I don't want to take anything away from Man City. We were talking about it a bit before we came in the studio today. They found a great blend in the players they have going forward. They still need to find a place at some point for Bernardo Silva, who doesn't seem to be starting many games at the moment, and he's a fantastic player as well. Gündoğan come off the bench, he's an asset. Sané's an asset as well.
Fabian Delph.
He sadly didn't get on the pitch, but Watford didn't need him.
It wasn't his game.
But you can't be churlish and say, oh, you know, City didn't deserve it. I was disappointed for obvious reasons. I really wanted that hat trick, and I thought if I could do it in a blaze of glory, it'd be even better. Yeah. But to not make it all about me, Watford I've been impressed with so far this season. They were disappointing, of course, but City can do that to any team. I mean, once they get going and they get up ahead of steam, very, very difficult for Watford to get back into the game. I think Marco Silva did feel genuinely aggrieved, because the last thing you want when you're a team, as Jim was just saying, who've set themselves up in that way, and they've been so well disciplined so far this season and really carried out their manager's instructions to the best of their ability, you get that real kick in the balls and get that offside goal against a team that are so good, then what do you do?
Yeah.
You know? Well, the answer is you shouldn't capitulate like they did, and it'd be disappointing for the fans, but City are a very, very good team.
Yeah. I mean, including the fact that probably two of those goals were offside, well, two of those goals absolutely were offside, and Silva also said they should have had a penalty for the foul on Chalobah. That's still a 4-1 home defeat, and it's going to be an incredibly chastening thing, isn't it, to set up your team to really go toe-to-toe with a team like Man City and get a thrashing like that. I mean, how does confidence recover from that? Because it's such a clear demonstration that you're not good enough
what we always say,
mix
Jim,
it with the best.
On this show, there's no disgrace in getting beaten by a good team, but what you want to do is get out of that sort of fixture, or that type of fixture, without getting battered. I mean, we'll probably come on to talk about Everton a bit later on. They're 1-0 down with 10 minutes left or whatever, and in the game, and they probably should have scored at least once, and all of a sudden they're on the back of a 4-0 defeat, and given the form they're in, that is very bad for confidence. So I just thought that, you know, Man City, they didn't win every game last season or anything like that at home or away, and so you think they have got a bit of a chance to. I mean, I remember they got beat quite handily by Leicester away last season, and you just thought, well,
no, it was at home. They drew away to Leicester last season. I thought you meant the title.
No, last season they were beaten 4-2 last season. Yeah, and that was quite a rainy night, and it was one of those types of games. You thought, well, Watford have been okay so far. There's a chance that they could. They could get turned over, but sadly it didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think with regards to Marco Silva saying, well, the first goal and the third goal and so on, I think maybe he is trying to send a message to his own players to say, we've been beaten by six, it wasn't a 6-0 loss.
Of course, and you understand that.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. But Guardiola also said that we have found our game, we can make short passes, we have a lot of energy from our fullbacks. I mean, he's utilising the fullbacks well, as he always does. He spent an awful lot of money on those fullbacks. So, you know, money talks, of course, in the game of football. I think that quote is very interesting. We have found our game. He looks very relaxed. If you look in the last three games, they've scored 15 goals. They scored 5 goals in the first 3 matches of the season. We've only had a handful or two of games into this season. From where I'm sitting, I look at that Man City set. If I was a professional footballer wanting to move to the Premier League, which I suppose, take out the word professional, and all that's still true, is that...
you may very well want to move to the Premier League, Marcus. I mean, unfortunately, the universe has decided that's not going to happen.
Any league at this stage.
Yeah.
You would look at that Man City side and think, that looks like an awful lot of fun.
And I look at you and think, you'd be lucky with Ryman Premier.
I would be extremely lucky with Ryman Premier.
Go on, Jim.
Yeah, the point stands. They are a fun team to watch, and you would imagine that's the case to play for them as well. And a lot has been made of the start City made last season, where they won, was it 10 games on the bounce? They were on a similar
run. Running streak, yeah.
Yeah, and Guardiola said after the game, this is a very good period. I'm curious to see how we react when things are not so good. It seems like a very pointed challenge to his team to look at last season and make sure that they don't make the same mistakes again. Because they seemed a little bit listless, didn't they? They got their first defeat, and it all seemed to wobble and go wrong, but they look stronger this year.
Well, the one thing Gerard Piqué said, the only criticism he had for Pep Guardiola at Barcelona was, we only had plan A.
Well, now, this is
plan
exactly
A
right.
Was so blisteringly good, they didn't need a plan B. But when I think, was it Tata Martino took over, he said, oh, finally we've got a plan B. Now, he hadn't had anywhere near the success of Guardiola.
Well, I think the name of the game here is going to be humility, and not just about Man City. We've seen teams, we saw Arsenal at the weekend, they showed a lot of humility in the way they set up against Chelsea. It was almost like they said to themselves, Chelsea at home, Chelsea at Stamford Bridge are a better team than us. How can we show a bit of humility, not arrogantly think we can match them and beat them? Let's set ourselves up to give ourselves the best chance of getting a result. And to take that back to Man City, you're right, City, I think, did win 10 games in a row in all competitions at the start of last season, didn't come anywhere near winning the title. And I would argue the reason they didn't is because they didn't show humility against playing teams who are better than them. Top teams need to be able to adjust their game. And I'll tell you who's a great example of that is Conte at Chelsea. They went away to Spurs earlier this season and they said, we're going to make it hard for Spurs. We don't think Spurs can break us down, and we pack that midfield and play some defensive players. And they nicked the game. I don't think Guardiola's got a great reputation at all in doing that. When you look at the players he's got to come in, the players I listed earlier, Bernardo Silva, Gündoğan, and Sane, these are all sort of attacking players with a similar sort of profile to players that are already in the team. So have they got a plan B? I don't think they have, but I'm sure we'll find out when they go to Old Trafford, when they go to Stamford Bridge, all these games come up.
Yeah, well, they're playing Chelsea at the end of September, and that's away at Stamford Bridge, which would be the first real test, I think, for Manchester City.
Chelsea will be without David Luiz,
yeah,
I think.
And I think with Manchester City, when you say, what will they do? I think it is kind of in the same remit. He likes to play possession football. If you want to attack a side, play possession football, be like the ball constrictor, wait for their little chinks in their arm, or whatever, and exploit that. Well, if we want to play defensively, well, we'll keep the ball so they can't attack us with it. You know, I don't think it'll look too differently, but yes, they have their weaknesses. They look a little bit soft perhaps at the centre, defensively not so good, but every team in the league's got weaknesses. But at the moment, Manchester City look like that they could really challenge for this title.
Agree. And I'll tell you what, going back to Vicarage Road, the man who's got so many mentions on this show so far this
season, Elton John.
Sir Elton John, if you don't mind, at the game. get a bit of screen time.
Was that why Guardiola was so pleased? Not only did Simon win 6-0, he met his, I presume, his hero, Sir Elton John.
Do you think that when Guardiola took his team into the away dressing room, there was a grand piano in there?
I'd say so.
Elton having a little tinkle.
What, in the away dressing room at the side that he's put so much money into?
Having a little tinkle.
I can see the Arsenal dressing rooms having a grand piano. Maybe not Watford, though.
The candelabra on the top. Yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, we move on to Manchester City's rivals, Manchester United, of course, yes. Rooney played well on his return at Old Trafford, but Everton were gubbed.
They were.
But it was a strange game, though, wasn't it? It didn't seem like a 4-0 until, as Luke mentioned earlier, that strange capitulation at the end. And what's really striking is how profoundly Rooney was their best player. And they seem reliant on him very quickly, which I, for one, did not see coming.
I think what is quite worrying, Jim, is in among all what's happened, you know, Wayne Rooney having to drive that team forward was quite...
Well, I was fascinated by the programme notes that Mourinho wrote about Ronald Koeman's Everton. He basically used the programme notes, which, as far as I understand them, are there to welcome the team to Old Trafford, talk a bit about your season so far.
He treats them like a roast of the opposition manager, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's basically saying that that Everton, with the money they spent, should need to be challenging top four. Now, we understand why he's doing that, and there's two parts to this, I think. One is that he's doing that clearly because I think, despite United's good start, he doesn't want to be too careful. He thinks that Everton might show a bit and maybe challenge them for a top four place. So they're a rival. But two, the second part of it is Mourinho's absolutely right. I mean, you've got to look at Marcus. I know you're a fan of Koeman's work, and you've watched Everton quite closely. What does success look like for Everton? To me, they have to be challenging for top four because I think they've been backed. They've taken the, well, Koeman, I suppose, has taken the decision to try and replace Lukaku's goals all around the pitch by signing lots of different players. He agreed to sell Lukaku early in the window so he could get his business done himself. And they are in a terrible run at the moment. They haven't scored for a while. They've not shown anything at all. Their marquee signing, if you like, for the season, Gylfi Sigurdsson, has shown absolutely nothing. And it's worrying times for Koeman and Everton. I think Koeman is second favourite for the sack now, which you wouldn't imagine would have happened if you thought about it in the summer.
Mm. Nice to see angry birds on their sleeves, though.
Stop deflecting.
I think that you're right. Some of the things you touched upon there. Everton need to be looking very, very ambitiously at the Premier League table this season with the money they've spent and some of the players they've got in, building on last season's performance. They're in Europe this season as well, so it shows you the ambitions of the club. I find it funny that they start with essentially three number 10s. Because Rooney really, I think, is, some people would argue that he is.
Even if you play him right up, he still drops in.
He still drops in like he did at Old Trafford, and he was probably their best player.
He should have had a goal. He should have scored.
He should have scored. He missed a really good chance, didn't he?
I think De Gea did very well with that, though.
He did. He just stood there, though. I mean, Rooney had the whole goal to aim at.
He did. He saved it. Of course, he did his job, but Rooney, he did his job because Rooney emphatically didn't do his job at that moment. But, you know, I think they would have... probably still, I don't know, they could have got something. But anyway, Rooney is in there. Sigurdsson, who we all know likes the team built all around him, is playing behind Rooney. Yeah. And was it Tom Davis who was in there as well? I find it funny that Koeman is persisting with this back three, because if he changes it to a back four, they have the personnel to have full backs in there. They have the personnel to have two midfielders. Maybe you have Gay and Schneiderlind behind Sigurdsson. So Sigurdsson's happy in his role. He's got two defensive midfielders behind him. Have a couple on the wings. Now, they may feel like they don't have enough quality on the wings, and then Rooney up top. Rooney likes to drop deep, but at the moment Rooney is dropping back as he does, and it's sort of standing on Sigurdsson's toes. He doesn't know. It's taking a while to click. I would have two runners next to Rooney on the wings, like, you know, a Lingard and a Martial, like they did for a little bit of Man United.
I felt really sorry for Everton fans, because there was this one moment where Lukaku took a free kick And he just completely fluffed it, and everyone started cheering. And obviously, he just fired it in, scored.
Yeah,
and cupped his ear. He wouldn't have cupped his ear if he didn't get those pelters from the Everton fans in the first place.
I have no problem.
No, neither do I.
With a player doing that, because if you're going to give it, learn to take it.
Absolutely, he's got his right to reply, isn't he?
Of course.
Yeah. To be fair,
did you like it when Adebayor did that to the Arsenal
fans? Loved it.
That was funny. Though. Surely you could see it was
but
funny.
If you can't enjoy the silly side of football, then you've got no place watching it. Do you know what I mean?
Let's
and that's all part of that.
Let's not be chosen. Let's not be silly. But it was one.
one of the greatest moments in the history of the Premier League.
I agree. And I think for all Jim's fair-mindedness, and I can absolutely, knowing Jim, I can absolutely see why he would have found that funny and taken himself away from the situation. Mm-hmm. The sheer anger from the Arsenal fans in the present was enough to power 1,000 suns. If you could have just harnessed that, all the world's energy problems would be solved overnight.
Oh, yeah. The heads were as red as the shirts that day.
The steam was just coming off them all. Yeah, it was crazy.
It's brilliant, isn't
could
it?
Could have powered an airship. Yeah. It was unbelievable.
Could have powered a plane to fly a banner over the stadium.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Koeman held a meeting with his players after their loss against Atalanta in the Europa League.
We've been beaten again. Just wanted to let you know.
Yeah. Should we go to the pub?
Yeah, the players are like, yeah, we know that. We were there.
He encouraged them to be more aggressive and get the confidence levels up and not to let their standards drop. And then they lost by one more goal than that. It wasn't a 4-0 game. It wasn't a 4-0
game. Also, I mean, that's really interesting that you said don't let your standards drop, because that quite emphatically happened in the chronology of the game.
Yeah. I just think, you know, you say, Marcus, it wasn't a 4-0 game, and I understand why you're saying that, but I mean, if you capitulate and concede three goals in the last 7 minutes of the game, it's a 4-0 game.
They'll take heart from some of their players.
Yeah, they would, and they were in the game. They were absolutely in the game.
Yeah.
But those 7 minutes at the end of the match, they do still count. And you can't be giving away silly penalties, and you can't be sort of not reacting to things that are happening, because that goal difference, and we've seen teams miss out on the title from goal difference.
Yeah.
So that stuff does happen. So you have to be careful.
And going back to Wayne Rooney, his two goals are the only ones they've scored in the league thus far. And they were over-reliant on him against Manchester United at Old Trafford. I do wonder about that Sigurdsson signing. Now, I hope he proves us all wrong, and actually they do click, and it's great to watch. But they spent an awful lot of money on a player who, yes, he's good, but he didn't do very well at Spurs, possibly because of positional issues, and Spurs having other quality players in there. Koeman knew what he was hoping to get out of Rooney this season. They didn't get the replacement for Lukaku, so Rooney has gone up top. And Rooney can do that. He's already scored two. Again, the performance at Old Trafford.
But if Rooney delivers you 10 Premier League goals a season, you're going to be over the moon with that.
Yeah.
He's not a goal scorer.
He's not an out-and-out.
Not now.
Yeah, you would say. So, why not have, you know, Calvert-Lewin, stick him on the wing. You know, when Lookman returns, he might be out with injury. Forgive my haziness on that. You know, use the wings there.
Yeah.
But to stuff three number 10s, if
it's
you like.
It's weird. It's like a little tiny flying V, like he's watched the Mighty Ducks. It's just weird. And also, I mean, Barkley coming back just makes that problem worse, doesn't it? It's a weird situation.
Well, the Koeman response to Mourinho was so funny. It was like Koeman's face when he was asked about the Mourinho programme notes comments. Koeman was fuming. He had a look on his face, which was, I can't believe Mourinho said this. I am absolutely fuming with him.
Yeah.
And he said, and you know, Koeman's quite an evil, even-handed sort of quiet.
I don't
know
what evil. He's like. Evil, even-handed.
No, I don't know what he's like in person, but the media, he seems to be quite sort of level-headed.
Yeah.
But he said that it was the most sort of controversial thing you're ever going to get out of someone like Koeman. He was like, Mourinho, come on, get real.
Yeah.
get real.
Yeah, real. Right, yeah.
I heard a lovely thing recently that Koeman, he spends a lot of time on the Algarve on his days off, if you follow his...
Well, he's supposed to be taking training by the look of it.
Well, yeah. If you have a look on Twitter, there's some lovely photos of him on the Algarve.
Stop banging the drum.
Oi, and you know who pitched up next to him and had a villa built next door to him? Big Louis van Gaal.
Really? Oh, that's the worst neighbour on your holiday, surely.
Imagine that, though, in the morning. Yeah. Koeman's out on the balcony, you know, not a thread of clothing on him, thinking, yeah, look at my manner. And Louis van Gaal pitches up, yeah, they're big, but they're not that big. That's not a knife.
What a fascinating insight into your mind.
They would have a bollock off, wouldn't they?
Can I just say, Jim, can I hear more from Marcus?
I would imagine those two would get on famously, but they would be quite competitive. Oh, yeah. So you've got a pond in your... But yeah, you haven't got a waterfall in there. Like, you know, it would be a bit like that, wouldn't it? You are with your neighbours, Jim.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I guess the statue features would be themselves.
Uh-huh. Take away ponds and put in wheelie bins, and that's Jim's equivalent.
But having a dick.
You mentioned the Mighty Ducks earlier. What about the Mighty Hucks? Mick Hucknall was in the stands.
What a link. That wasn't even planned.
I'm filling in for Pete,
can't
by the
tell,
way.
Can you?
Who's obviously in Japan.
Yeah. Visiting the secret family.
With Mick Hucknall.
Sir Alex Ferguson was sat next to Mick Hucknall in the stands, obviously the lead singer of Simply Red.
Yeah, we got a little Facebook message from Peter Blow, who says, I realised this weekend that if he wore a ginger wig, Sir Alex Ferguson could probably get away with using Mick Hucknall's passport.
Ooh.
So if those of you out there who are adept at using Photoshop in Pete's absence, please by all means fill your boots and let us know.
We're giving old Blowy a lot of airtime, aren't we?
Who, Peter Blow? Yeah. Was he there before, was he?
Yeah,
he's not a friend of the Ramble yet, is he?
He's getting on for it.
Is he?
Let's change it. Let's make him one now.
Is Mick Hucknall a friend of the Ramble?
Certainly. No. certainly not, although we did enjoy one of his performances. Some of you will remember this. Those who are new to the parish will not know that Luke and I went to the Nordoff Robbins extravaganza at the Grosvenor Hotel in London, which was full of ex-footballers and football illuminati, it's safe to say. And
Pelé, I think you mean luminaries, yeah. Not illuminati.
That would be a conspiracy
secret
theory
lizard
too
society.
Far.
You weren't there, Jim?
No. It's a conspiracy in itself.
True. Yeah, okay, that one. Lots of people from the world of football were there, and it was good to be in their company. Pelé was the guest of honour.
Yeah.
Richard Keys was on stage.
Guest of disgrace.
Yeah.
And Mick Hucknall sang a song for Pelé.
Yeah.
Which was
very
surreal.
It's one of the most surreal moments of my life, I'll be honest. I never thought Mick Hucknall would be singing anyone a song in my presence. Right. Well, I hoped he wouldn't anyway.
Certainly wouldn't think Richard Keys would also be there.
Yeah. But it was almost like, you know, when you have a dream and you wake up and you think, oh, that was odd.
Yeah.
It actually happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Mick's a big Man United fan. To be fair to him, he's a big football fan.
That's why they're called Simply Red.
And listen, he must have something about him if he sat next to Sir Alex for a United game.
They're mates.
I know they are, yeah. Mm.
Exactly. Apparently when Mick used to live out in Milan, was it, or had a house in Milan, Ferguson would go out there, they'd watch Inter together or AC.
Oh, what a night out.
Lovely times. Ali and Mickey.
Pelé just rocking up.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Naked next door. Probably got a house there as well.
Van Gaal and Koeman sat behind him.
Testies out.
Yeah.
Celebrity detectives, football detectives, Ronald Koeman and Louis Van Gaal. Koeman and Van Gaal.
Oh, dear. Shall we move on to Roy Hodgson?
Yes, why not?
He didn't get anything from his first game in charge of Palace.
He did not.
They are in big trouble. Big trouble, Jim.
They are, but what I find really fascinating about this is obviously, you know, they've lost the first five games without scoring a goal, and that's a terrible run.
It's a record.
They're still only three behind Bournemouth and four behind Everton, Leicester, West Ham, Brighton. So,
well, they'll sleep easy then.
Yeah, no, but just a win changes it a lot more than you would think after five games.
We've been doing this show for a long time, and I don't remember ever when we've been so concentrating on the league table in September. Don't worry about that. There's nothing to point out or to suggest that Crystal Palace are going to get relegated because of what they've just done.
So they're not in trouble.
Well, they are in trouble as far as they haven't won a game yet, but there are still like 33 games left.
Yeah, I said they were in big trouble.
Put it in this way.
Oh, they're just big trouble.
Put it this way, Marcus. Mm. They could still win the title, literally.
Okay. You fancy another flutter, do
well,
you?
Actually, I've just looked. No,
you're
just
not in the chair anymore.
I've just looked at their next three games. They won't win the title.
Exactly. That's what I mean. We said they needed to get something out of this game against Southampton, and even if they'd have got that equaliser, I mean, Fraser Forster made a couple of great saves.
He made one fantastic save.
Yeah,
out of nowhere.
I remember I was watching the game and I thought, if they can just get a point, it gives them so much more confidence. And the fact that they'll go away thinking, we should have scored, we should have got something out of the game, they didn't, and now they go away to Manchester City, then away to Manchester United, and I think it's Chelsea at home after that.
It is, yeah.
My goodness. But if they need some confidence, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, Roy Hodgson could be the man to do it. Danny Murphy made some interesting points on Match of the Day 2, and he said that when Hodgson came in to manage Fulham, when Murphy was there, Fulham were down in the doldrums. They weren't playing well at all. They weren't getting any points. Confidence was very low. Hodgson came in, drilled them in training, as we know he does, but he said he gave them the freedom to play within that, which is quite interesting. And he also said about his confidence that Hodgson gave the players, and it had an enormous impact, and of course he kept them up against all odds that season.
Mark Schwartz, I spoke to him this morning briefly, and he was obviously at Fulham under Hodgson as well, and he said that when Hodgson first came in around that time, it was very monotonous and very almost quite boring, and the players were thinking, looking around going, come on, what's happening here? But slowly but surely the results started to pick up. People started to see how these training drills related directly to match situation. And Hodgson has got such vast experience at football at that level that as the results started to pick up, they naturally picked up confidence. And all of a sudden, it was almost like it worked perfectly. And from then on, it was great. And so, to cut a long story short, I suppose it might take a little bit more time than people realise. But I think Palace should start picking up points. Well, probably not within the next three games, but maybe after that.
Yeah. Well, that's what Kevin Gallagher mentioned that in the interview for the Acast special this month about working with Hodgson at Blackburn, and I think that Hodgson he's taken a realistic approach like Sam Allardyce did. When Sam Allardyce went there, he said, this is going to be tough.
Took him a while to get them going.
I think we're going to be able to do it, but this is going to be tough. And they are the sounds that Hodgson's making. But with regards to what you said, Jim, about the table, and also you, Luke, about it's only September, let's not be hasty. It's true, even if they don't win the next three games, which you can't imagine them doing, if they get 1 point on paper in the next three games, that'll be decent. Mm. They'll still be in the runnings for staying up, for crying out loud. You know, there's still a lot of football to be played. And if Hodgson can just get the wheels turning and turn the ship around, as it were, then they really will have a chance. So we've got high hopes for Hodgson at Palace.
Well, but, I don't actually care. I mean, if they get relegated, I don't care. Well,
no, I quite like Palace.
What we've said is we have high hopes for him at Palace, but he'll probably be gone by November after that. We're going to talk about Arsenal and Newcastle after this.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
I see Wayne getting involved. I saw him last week slapping a wrestler. I'm thinking, why is he getting involved in all that nonsense?
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Before we talk about those Arsenals, let's have some correspondence, Jim.
Hello. Hi, Ramblers. Long-time listener, first-time caller, and unfortunately a story to add to the David Seaman selfie debacle, as it's now become known in the wider world. I believe David and I lived in the same neck of the woods for a period of our lives. There were always stories hovering around about unconfirmed sightings of this rare but beautiful ponytailed beast. That was until, in a local shop, there appeared a signed photograph of the man himself perched proudly above the counter. Not a selfie, but a photo from his glory days in which he was stretching to tip out a drilled shot towards the far post. It was signed simply, "Thanks for the mushrooms, David Safe Hand Seaman." Nice. All in capitals. So there you go. Maybe not a fan of the selfie, but certainly a fun guy. Love always, Joe Brownen.
Thanks for the mushrooms.
What David Seaman should do is just carry a sort of, you know, a good cachet of those types of photos.
Like actor headshots, maybe.
Yeah,
even.
So when people ask for a selfie, you can have this one instead. I mean, yeah. Everyone happy then.
Can imagine him in a turtleneck with that ponytail, in black and white, proper actory headshot.
I think I'd prefer an action football action shot, but I mean that would maybe be a compromise.
There's nothing to stop him carrying a selection around.
Exactly.
So if you're listening, David, maybe do that.
But the thing is, that is more trouble than just giving someone a selfie.
Quite. Yeah, you could get them to do it all for you.
I know. Yeah.
Got another one, as is the tradition. Hey, Ramblers, just picking on your horse calves chat. I vaguely remember from A-level biology 20 years ago, so this may be fallible, that the pentadactyl limb evolution in horses meant that they are essentially walking on their middle fingers.
Now, right, okay.
That's fascinating to me. With this in mind, their calves would presumably be much further up their legs on their rear end. Like I say, it's a vague recollection, so I'm happy to be corrected, but if horses do wander around essentially flipping everyone the bird, this does explain why Geordies are happy to throw a punch at them. Cheeky little equine mugs.
Yeah, Dele Alli was given a little tribute to the horses, wasn't he?
Wembley.
Perhaps he was.
Luckily, Pete's not here to further that conversation. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah. It's ideal, really, isn't it?
Any more, Jim?
Yeah, greetings, Ramblers. Pardew was again in self-effacing form during the pre-match coverage of Palace versus Southampton on Saturday. Talking about Jason Punchin, Pard said he was in non-league. He was nowhere before I signed him. Punchin, of course, signed for then League One Southampton from then Championship Plymouth Argyle and even played against Pardew Southampton in League One whilst on loan at
MK
Dons. Sometimes I question whether Pard actually has Brent-esque levels of delusion and believes what he's saying, or if he's just a fib-telling rotter. Toodles, Andrew Johns.
See, if he built a villa next to Van Gaal and Koeman, he would walk out on the balcony and they'll be like, get back indoors with that.
Absolutely. He wouldn't, though, would he?
Leave it.
No.
This is getting strange, I must say.
Pardew, never let a truth get in the way of a good story. That's
absolutely
what I say.
Absolutely.
The man's got his own myth to build up.
Yeah, but an easily debunked one.
Yeah. Debunked myth. Yeah, well, it's not always going to work, is it? Keep trying.
By the time Pard just put that out there and we're all debunking it, he's moved on. He's on to his next job.
Exactly.
Like the Donald.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Like the Donaldson.
For one more. Lads, I'm a Dunfermline fan and we have had both the actor who played Les Battersby in Coronation Street and the Blazing Squad paraded at half time. Les had a Pard shirt with Battersby 1 on the back. Tragic. Kind regards, Nicky Blair. So, that's in response to the calls for celebrity unveilings.
The Blazing Squad? What on earth?
Blazing Squad in Dunfermline.
Yeah.
They must have been doing a show that night or something. Last week, for those who didn't hear it, I made a call for incongruous parading of celebrities around ground.
This was after Tito Jackson at Wolves.
Yeah. A few people did point out that the ultimate is Michael Jackson at Exeter City with Yuri Geller. Yeah. I mean, that's the high watermark.
That's good.
I mean, there was obviously a statue outside Fulham of Michael Jackson, as we all know. But Michael Jackson and Yuri Geller, I think Michael Jackson might have even addressed the crowd from a lectern at St James's Park for Exeter play. So if you're going to get anywhere near that, then please do get in touch.
Who's the actor? Tony Curtis, I think, was paraded at Fulham once upon a time.
A famous actor from Some Like It Hot.
Indeed.
Yeah, but I think he probably was a Fulham fan, was he not?
Well, Hugh Grant is, and I don't think he's ever been paraded.
Well, maybe he's not quite up to muster.
Yeah. Or maybe he has, I don't know.
Might say more about Hugh Grant.
I've definitely seen Hugh Grant in the crowd at Fulham, actually watching the game.
Yeah, he was...
Maybe he doesn't want any fuss.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's definitely what it is.
Didn't Cliff Richard do a song at Wimbledon once?
Yeah, he did.
Not AFC, though.
No. If you do want to get in touch, the address is show@thefootballroundwater.com for all that sort of chat.
.com. Arsenal got a credible point at Stamford Bridge. They're still not going to win the league, are they, Jim? But they look like a cohesive unit that was evidently difficult to break down.
Yeah, that was a really positive thing about it. You know, it's a lot's been made of the fact. Yeah, obviously it's a draw. It's not a win. It's not, you know, it's not a huge thing to shout about. But the improvement of the performance from this game from the Liverpool game is absolutely immense. And it's simply just down to the discipline. This is a frustrating thing. I mean, you think any side with the ambition to you know, go for the title, as Arsenal regularly state is the case. Which personally, you know, I think that's fanciful, but you would expect that as the bare minimum from a team in every single match, whoever they're playing against. But, you know, it's good that clearly the ideas that they're being sort of, you know, taken through are taking root, and they were so, so disciplined. Every player on the pitch was incredibly disciplined, and Danny Welbeck should have scored. Lacazette probably should have scored as well, and obviously Chelsea had a few chances here and there, but it was a far, far more encouraging performance.
I like how you gloss over Chelsea's charge. Oh, he should have scored. Chelsea had a foot. Pedro should have scored.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, yeah, of course. I'm not glossing over it.
Treating this like Glenn Hoddle's England going away to Italy and getting a 0-0 draw and qualifying for the World Cup. That's how enjoyable this was for you,
Jim. I didn't know that was going to go in that direction.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to point, just to go back to what I said earlier in a slightly different context about this humility, and what Arsenal were able to do was show a bit of humility and say, look, we're going to set ourselves up here, be disciplined, make it hard for them to beat us, and ended up, lo and behold, without Ozil and Sanchez, being the better side, because they stuck to their shape, they worked really hard. Ramsey and Xhaka knew what was expected of them in the middle of the park, and we all saw the graphic of their average positions that was put on the BBC, which was a staggering thing to see, absolutely brilliant. And it shows that Wenger is still actually able to get through to his players and get them to perform a disciplined type of approach. And, you know, as I said this on the radio earlier, they're playing West Brom at home in the league next, and then they play Brighton at home. You can let your hair down in those sort of games. Set yourself up to be swashbuckling, to blow those sort of teams away and win. When you go away to Chelsea, make it hard. Yeah. And you'll pick up more points. And it's no coincidence that their record away from home against big teams is terrible, because they don't adjust their game or give any sort of sacrifice to the fact that the other team might be better than them.
Yeah, well, my concern actually is that... these lessons are forgotten very quickly. So I don't necessarily see there's anything wrong with setting up like that against West Brom at home. See how it, you know, see how it pans out. Use that platform to try and go ahead, and then perhaps, you know, open it up, make it flow a bit more. Because, you know, that sort of thing, it goes back to actually, it's kind of what Jamie Carragher was saying about that, you know, that settled back three, or Rio Ferdinand rather, last week, how it, you know, it becomes like a kind of telepathic understanding between the players. If you, you know, if you do that all the time, when it comes to the big games, it's going to be easier because it's going to be natural. If you, as I say, it's just the minimum.
I think the thing it also throws into fairly stark focus is the fact that Arsenal in the big games have shown themselves to, especially away from home, have shown themselves to be able to be the better team without their two so-called big stars. Mm. But he didn't need to bring Sanchez on. I sort of understand why he did, but he didn't have to do that. They can, look, I don't care how unfashionable it is to say this, they can't afford to have Ozil and their team away from home against a big team. Because he doesn't... look how hard Iwobi worked without the ball. Look how disciplined he was in position, in keeping, you know, keeping the intensity up. And I don't think Ozil gives you that. I don't think he gives you that intensity. And so you could argue for the amount of money that Ozil was asking for and for the amount of money Sanchez is asking for to stay, would you be better off saying, look, no thanks, we're going back to basics here, we're gonna make ourselves a really tough unit, we've got enough quality to beat teams like Brighton at home anyway with respect to them, we don't actually need it, we're not playing in the Champions League this season, we're going to make it tough for our people, good teams to beat us.
I think with the next two games with West Brom and Brighton, there's definitely, you know, a good 4 points for Arsenal in those games. But and that is a dig. But with that humility you talked about there, Luke, did that humility reach the stands with those Arsenal fans, in particular that one gentleman who I assume is a friend of yours, Jim?
I haven't actually seen this.
I was brilliant. There's a great photo of it where Mustafi's wheeling away in celebration and he's right on there. He's in mid-air thinking, that's me. This is worth getting a potential life ban from all the stadia around the country. And of course, it was disallowed, the silly sod.
So does that still count? Can he still be banned?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's right. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
It's like a foul when the whistle's already gone.
No, flag was up, so you can't do me.
And your stewards are like, all right, get back in your seat then.
I genuinely hope that they do see some leniency because of exactly how daft it is. I imagine they won't.
But I love that was a perfect storm, the Mustafi thing, because he doesn't score many goals, right? So when you see a player who knows they're right on the edge in terms of offside and onside, a forward player who scores a lot of goals, what's the first thing they do? They look over to the flag. Mustafi's not having any of that. Yeah. He's doing the bird celebration. He's off.
For what it felt like minutes.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Jesus did that, didn't he, for Man City? He had a look over. Yeah. And he was like, yeah, that's grand. But Mustafi knows such nonsense. David Luiz was sent off. The one he was given a straight red card for was definitely a straight red card. People saying that perhaps he could have been sent off for that overhead kick that ended up, his boot ended up in Koscielny's upper chest?
Yeah.
Was that a straight red, Luke? You think it was?
Well, I'm obviously not going to win many friends by saying this. I'm not someone who would like to see the overhead kick stamped out of the game, but I'm just going to put it out there with the letter of the law as it stands. I mean, because that's all we can do, really. A tackle or challenge that endangers the safety of an opponent or uses excessive force or brutality must be sanctioned as serious foul play. Now, serious foul play is a red card offence. Mm-hmm. The letter of the law as it's been written and as it's supposed to be implemented by referees is that David Luiz, in a crowded penalty area, has no business putting his foot 6.5 foot up in the air with force. So technically, he should have been sent off. Now, yeah, I don't actually agree with it. I don't agree with the law. I think I understand why the law's in place, and I wouldn't necessarily like to see it interpreted in that way. But I think it's pretty unambiguous, really. And some people made the point about...
So if a goalkeeper goes to punch the ball out and accidentally catches someone's head, do you think that's dangerous play?
Well, I've just read you the law. I mean, what do you think? I mean, if he's endangering the safety of an opponent by throwing his fist at 100 mile an hour in the direction of someone's head, I mean, to me it seems... as I've just said, quite unambiguous. I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just saying that's how it is.
I mean, if that player does get clattered by the fist, I mean, it's surely the proof is in the pudding. It's been proven to be dangerous by the outcome of it, you know? And I mean, no one's saying that you can't... goalkeepers can't punch or people can't ever overhead kick again. Mm. It's just in these
He's a very affable chap, David Luiz, and I think it's probably why he put that foul in. Because he thought, they're going to talk about this, should I have been sent off, level it up, let's just get me done here, and then everyone's happy.
Well, if I get another yellow here, it's just one game, so if I do a straight yellow, I get three games off.
I think he did very well to fell a moving tree.
Yeah, two points on the old overhead kick thing, though, as well, just quickly. The Wayne Rooney example, but you'll never see a goal like Wayne Rooney scored against Man City again.
Well, overhead kicks shouldn't be outlawed.
Well, you will, because there was no one around him, so he wasn't endangering opponent. And secondly, by the way, and when he did that law that I've just read, I don't think it was in place in that way.
Yeah, but no one's saying that overhead kicks should be outlawed.
In the same way, if, you know, Mane having his boot up that high, if there's no one around him, it's fine. So there's no argument.
Yeah, because Mane wouldn't have been sent off if he controlled the ball that high with his foot when there's no one around.
Exactly.
Him,
so the thought of, well, overhead kicks will be better. No, that's just a silly thing to say.
It's the football equivalent of everything being PC's gone mad.
Well, yeah, but that is fair comment, though, Jim. speaking of which, Newcastle United, they currently occupy a Champions League spot.
Well, that is football gone mad.
That is modern football at its strangest.
Pete's so annoyed he's left the country.
Yeah,
Because they're only going to let him down.
He's furious. Yeah, exactly. Well, we're not going to stay in fourth, so why bother occupying that spot now? We might as well have lost the game.
What's the point?
Jamal Lascelles led by example with a lovely header. He's the man of the moment up there, isn't he? He recently sorted out with Mike Ashley over the phone, and crucially over the phone, because you wouldn't want to meet up with Ashley to discuss potential bonus payments and so on. You'd end up in a drinking contest.
Yeah,
there would be vomit in a fireplace somewhere.
We've heard all about how
very undignified,
work.
I think you'll agree, ladies and gentlemen. They agreed that each player will get over £1 million if all targets are met. That's if they win the FA Cup. They'll get the majority of the bonus money, and to get the other bonus money, all Newcastle need to do is finish in the top 10. Well, Newcastle are currently fourth, and they're still in the FA Cup, all to play for. All to pay for Mike Ashley, maybe.
Yeah, another good win for them as well. I mean, Rafa Benitez, I don't know if can think of a coach who's so successful and so delivers so regularly, being sort of having question marks over his ability. I mean, he's won things wherever he's gone, really.
I don't think people have been questioning him. I think they've been questioning Mike Ashley, have they not?
No, I don't mean in the particular context of Newcastle. I just mean if people start talking about the great managers and good managers around, and let me put it another way.
That's why it was at the elite coaching thing the other day we spoke about.
If Jurgen Klopp leaves Liverpool, Benitez going to be in the shortlist?
Not for Liverpool, no.
No, he won't be, will he? But what's what I'm saying? That's my point.
Well, it's not a great example with Liverpool. He wouldn't go back to his old club.
Well, but the point... Okay, fine. But the point is, Marcus, I think you understand the point. I mean, I can make it crystal clear for you. Enjoy your picture if you want. The point is he's not being shortlisted for big jobs, is he?
Well, I think you're wrong, because he managed Real Madrid before Newcastle. He chose to stay at Newcastle. I think if Benitez became available, I think he would.
He managed Real Madrid for how long?
A couple of weeks. But that's a combination of the results going very badly because of him, and also Real Madrid being an absolute circus when it comes to that sort of thing.
Well, but what you're saying is Benitez isn't being shortlisted for certain jobs, but I don't know which jobs that he would have been shortlisted for.
Okay, but let me put it a slightly different way then. He's quite underrated in terms of people respect for how much he's achieved in the game.
Possibly.
Is there a better way to put it? He's Rafa Benitez and he manages Newcastle.
Yeah, there we go.
Is that it?
Yeah, but he clearly chose to stay. He wanted to, you know, we know that he lives in England, he likes living here, for reasons best known to himself, and he had a chance to potentially build something at Newcastle. The fans showed him a lot of love, which is something that maybe, because of the reasons that you've just said, Luke, he hasn't received elsewhere. He got pelters at Chelsea and he won them a European trophy and I think finished in the top four, and has been perhaps derided quite nastily.
I just still think
Inter and Real Madrid.
Maybe I phrased it badly, but I just still think there are question marks over him when people talk about his abilities as a manager. People start saying things like, oh, you know, was he that good here, or was he that good there? Well, actually, he's won things pretty much. You know, the Real Madrid sort of debacle aside, and potentially, as Jim said, there are other reasons for that. He's pretty much consistently won stuff wherever he's been. He's won the Liga with unfancied Spanish teams. He's won the Champions League. The performance at Chelsea under unbelievable difficulty was very, very impressive.
He won
a
league title at Newcastle United.
Yeah, exactly. Of sorts.
End of conversation. Yeah. The man has quality.
And the good thing for me, actually, in a week, which is weekend, that's been pretty bad football-wise, although Pompey did win. Hossaloo missed quite a few chances. Which
he did.
Is good to say.
An actual hat-trick of chances.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, that's fun. But Matt Ritchie was very good. He will be crucial to that Newcastle United side on his deliveries alone. They should call him the postman, Jim. Maybe they do. Maybe they don't.
Scotsman through and through as well. It's good to see him.
Well, he was picked for Scotland and he hadn't been to the country. That was the joke there, of course.
Yeah. Did you see what Jamal Lascelles says about Hossaloo's misses in particular? As in the goals he didn't score.
Laughing emojis on Instagram?
No. He said he knows himself he should have scored a couple of goals today, but good teammates get each other out of the shit. And he spoke at length about...
Did he say a sweary word?
He did say a sweary word, but he spoke at length about, you know, pulling together and not, you know, abandoning players if it's not going well and just actually keeping that air of positivity around. I really, really like the cut of his jib, Lascelles.
I do.
Real fresh breath of fresh air.
I agree too. I think he's a real pro. I like every time I see him speak, and I think he's great. Be so young and be a captain of such a big club. I mean, this is a club that's averaging what 50,000 fans in the Championship. Mm. I mean, he's got a big responsibility, and I think he's grown to it.
I think Pete
leading
would think,
by example at 23 years old as
Pete,
well.
Pete would probably say, well, we should just sell him before he maybe turns a bit rubbish.
He takes double the responsibility that Pete takes, and Pete's like 15 years older than him. Pete should take a leaf out of his book.
Well, if you want to talk about men well into their 30s taking responsibility, Gareth Barry.
Yeah.
Mm. Gareth bloody Barry. He's equaled Ryan Giggs' Premier League appearances record of 632, and I think that's good.
I would agree with that, Mark.
I think it's good that he will have the record because I think he's a better bloke than Ryan Giggs.
Oh, that's probably true. Probably fair, yeah. I think he might be waiting a while to challenge Ryan Giggs in the trophy department, but in terms of sheer turning up, yeah, he's done well.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
Because that type of player, Gareth Barry, is an example to so many players. You can do the simple things well. You can be in title-winning sides, you can play for many, many years, you can be in international tournaments and so on and so forth. Wonderful, 632 Premier League appearances.
And you know what I feel about
different class.
About how football fans in England think about players who just don't give the ball away, unspectacular, sort of shuttling type, solid midfield players. Gareth Barry fits in that mould, I'd say. He normally averages, you have, what, 30-odd games a season in the league, particularly consistently. Absolute hammer of a left foot on him. I mean, he's basically been part of the Premier League furniture ever since you can remember. Mm-hmm. And you know, at his best.
And has changed his position.
Yeah, true. I mean, he started off as a left back, didn't he?
Left back, a wing back, all down the left because he was left footed. And England at a time were going, why can we not produce any players with a left foot? He's got one right out on the left straight away.
That's a good testament to him, actually, because now you think of him as a central midfield player, don't you?
You do, so
it's a real
a very
testament.
Steady central midfielder in the mould of Paul Lambert, one might say.
Well, Ronald Koeman could do with him back.
Yeah, he certainly could. But Koeman did say that he may well rue the day that he let Gareth Barry go.
I think he might already be doing that.
Isn't Gareth Barry a little bit past playing the number 10 role now?
I think that's true. Yeah.
Maybe, but, yeah.
When Ronald Koeman said that about Gareth Barry, do you think he meant in about 2 weeks' time? I might rue this in about a fortnight.
Come down to the Algarve. Right then, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about the Championship after this.
If I had 99 more England caps, I'd have had 100.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Don't forget the preview show sponsored by Bet365 is out on Friday. Luke couldn't make a hat-trick. He is out of the hot seat. A great effort, though. He got a double.
I said on Twitter I should never be allowed in the hot seat again, and I'm sticking to it. But I'll just tell you again, it was a close game and it could have gone either way.
We need a new challenger, everybody.
We do. Get in touch. Show at thefootballramble.com. Put bet of the week in your subject line and I will pick one for Thursday or Friday show.
Wonderful. Luke is out of the chair and Harry Redknapp is out of a job. Redders has gone, ladies and gentlemen. Ding dong, Harry's gone. Birmingham have sacked him. He didn't even leave of his own accord this time. Sacked after 13 games in charge. Birmingham have lost 6 straight games in all competitions. Smirks on faces in the studio right now.
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, it's a little bit classy to start laughing about someone losing their job, whoever they are.
Pete did it when Alan Pardew lost his job.
That's up to Pete. Pete lives by his own set of rules. Pete's like Liam Neeson in Taken. He does it himself. That's up to him.
But, so you're sad to see Harry go?
I wasn't, no. But I wasn't overtly happy either.
I said smirk, not grins.
Okay. Well, we can talk about the difference between those later. If you want, but I mean, it is a bit of, as low as I am to say, it's a bit of a strange thing to fire him so early when they've given him so many players. I mean, 14 players have come in, including the club record signing. The club are clearly quite badly run because they've made a few very, very strange managerial decisions. They've now got to bring another manager in. I think Lee Carsley's there sort of at the moment as a caretaker. They're probably going to bring another manager in who's going to have to work with all these players. And it just seems a little bit unjoined up, but not surprising with the regime that have made a lot of those odd decisions. On the other hand, you know, they've lost 6 games in a row, and you know Redknapp is never his fault. Well, ultimately the responsibility stops with him. You know, so he can't have any complaints really, can he?
I think there are 6 players that they brought in though that he's not had a chance to play yet, and it does seem very, very early to with that in mind to just make this what looks like quite a panicked decision.
Whenever someone says, I take your point, but whenever someone says that, I always think about the idea of Redknapp being fairly laissez-faire with the idea of a medical when he signs a player.
Well, Redknapp said that Birmingham have got a squad that is probably as good as they've had for a long time.
Yeah, and what he's... But the thing is, he says anything he wants to say.
He came out with his usual tosh.
Because this morning on the radio, he said, I didn't get any of the players that I wanted.
Yeah, and
so
also...
on one hand... Well, sorry, Jim. On one hand, you didn't get any of the players that you wanted, but the players you did get are going to be challenging for the playoffs. Well, I mean, what is it? Which
when
one
he
is
said,
it?
I genuinely believe Birmingham have 7 forward players who are as good as any in the Championship, who unfortunately haven't been playing because of injury. We've obviously got a few players in there who you did want and do like playing...
Well, I hope it doesn't mean the club record signing in that, because otherwise, why are they sanctioning that?
I mean, yeah. Also, at the end of last season, when he took over at the club, he said he didn't really know anything about the players there, and you know, hadn't been really keeping up with what was going on down there. Suddenly, he's now an expert of every player in the Championship, and he reckons, you know, however many of the best players are at Birmingham. It just doesn't add up, does it?
I spoke to him on the radio this morning briefly and gave him an opportunity to take some personal responsibility for Birmingham's poor start. He respectfully declined to do that. That's the best way I can sum it up.
Yeah, did you see the Birmingham City fan who got attacked? Tattoo of Harry Redknapp leaning out of a car window on his ankle.
Oh my
he
goodness.
Deserves everything he gets, that guy. I haven't seen it, but I can only imagine the misery in that man's life.
Mm. Well, Redknapp said that he felt that if he was given time, he would have got a team like Birmingham challenging for promotion. He had no doubt about that. So we'll never know.
Yeah, on the other hand, by the way, slightly going sort of changing trains. Aston Villa are quietly building something by the look of it. They haven't lost in 6 games now. They're starting to get up ahead of steam.
Mm. Well, Redknapp said he could have been his last managerial job in football. He said he'd like to help somewhere, though, maybe with a young manager.
Good, yeah.
I should be behind the scenes, don't, you know, like Tim Sherwood is at Swindon, that kind of thing. No responsibility.
the ghost at the feast.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't be fired because it's not a real job. Yeah.
All of the decisions, none of the responsibility. Yeah. That is a lovely old job, ladies and gentlemen. Right then, shall we just pop over to China briefly? There was the Shanghai Derby, happened over the weekend. We mentioned Vyesh Boeish's boys in Asian Champions League difficulties last time round when, of course, it was Wangzhou Evergrande who were holding them up by trying to ram them off the road and all that kind of stuff. It was all a bit nefarious. Mm. But they beat Shanghai Shenhua 6-1 with Hulk getting a double. Although it was good to see Carlos Tevez back in the side for Shanghai Shenhua. This is after he was called fat by manager Wu Jingzhu. And Jingzhu said that until Carlos gets himself in shape, he won't play. Well, obviously Tevez has.
Very
quickly. $650,000 a week may have helped with that. I don't know. He's the highest paid player in world football. It's good to remind ourselves of that. he went home to Argentina while recovering from a muscle injury and came back overweight. Goodness knows what happened there. Teaming up with Diego Costa.
I can't think of a doctor in the world that says, you've got a bit of a muscle injury, why don't you fly home 20,000 kilometres to try and get over
to
it?
To the land of steak barbecue.
Yeah.
To South America, where everyone really behaves themselves in that kind of context.
It's like a 15-hour flight.
Dr. Nick, isn't it?
How's that good for his circulation? It is age as well, Carlos.
I do
not.
Not
getting any younger, is he?
But good to see Vyesh Boeish having a bit more of a straightforward victory rather than having to go to penalties after his side were nearly trafficked out of the tie.
He was absolutely fuming, Vyesh Boeish. There was a great email we got in about that happening before to a Western Sydney Wanderers team.
We had a lot of that come in. So the first person he sent through was a guy called Mark Moyman. So I'm going to take this based on him. So,
go on, Moisey.
More is emerging about the Evergrande stuff, right? This is from 2014. Western Sydney Wanderers star Shannon Cole has questioned whether Guangzhou Evergrande fans were encouraged to be hostile towards his team for the second leg of their Asian Champions League quarterfinal in China. The team, as well as it seemed like everyone in the city, did their best to make it difficult for us. We had people banging on our doors at 3, 4, 5 in the morning, phone calls throughout the night, hurling abuse at us and stuff like that. On the way to the game, someone purposely swerved in front of our bus, slammed their brakes on, our bus hit them, and then a bus hit us from behind. We had a backup bus, but then 5 minutes later had another accident. They did everything possible at the ground, hundreds of bottles were hurled at us, and it then becomes incredibly Australian. But full credit to the guys, it was a fun experience and something we all had a laugh about.
Yeah, no bother.
Brilliant. Yeah, they did actually win.
It's like giving them credit for what they did.
Western Sydney Wanderers won the AFC Champions League that year.
Yeah.
I think they've only been a club for like 5 or 6 years. They won it in 2014. Is the
robust
year we're talking
on
about.
And off the pitch.
But other reports I heard, even more than that, was that there were... Apparently, the team were in the team hotel, and every single hotel room, the phone just rang all night.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. Apparently, yeah.
People knocking on doors, weren't
but
they?
But there was a long tradition of that, though, because do you remember the reports...
England in 82.
And in 70. apparently there was like a samba band outside ahead of the Brazil game all night in Mexico.
Right.
I think there is a little bit of a tradition with doing that type of stuff.
Yeah. Still, the car stuff is naughty.
It's terrible. You're literally endangering people's lives. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think the problem for England in 82 when they were in Spain, people said it was linked to the Falklands. I think they were trying to do they were trying to keep up another side, but because England had Kevin Keegan, they got the wrong help total and kept them up all night. It's absolutely extraordinary what you were saying, Jim. I mean, the bus crashing in from behind, that's a pincer.
Yeah.
They've been done by a pincer movement.
They had a spare bus, so have they been warned about this?
But I thought to myself, what they should do is, if you're going to play Wang's Whoever Grandee away, turn up and have three buses. Right, the team are on one, but you've got buses all around the city. Dummy buses. You need dummy buses.
What sort of person is doing that job?
It's amazing.
Who are you hiring for that?
Absolutely incredible. Yeah. Well, who's coordinating it? The whole thing fascinates me.
Are you hiring Ryan Gosling in Drive?
It's Baby Driver.
Yeah.
Mad.
I've no idea. Let's have some highlights of the week before we finish.
Yeah, we all get a break from going for gold this week because there's no Peter. So the pressure's off us, which is nice, isn't it? It's nice to have a little break. So
we're like the pressure.
We're doing highlights of the week instead, Marcus. We've got no choice in the matter.
All right.
First up, Andy Dutton. My highlight of the week is David Gold tweeting about the progress of West Ham having moved up one position because Everton dropped below us on goal difference.
DG.
Our social media gets more and more embarrassing by the day. DG. if you want a better chance of having your highlight of the weekend read out on this show, you best end it with DG. It does tend to work. Luke Thomas, I think I speak on behalf of everyone when I say Luke's quote, "I fancy Watford to get something at home to City." Yeah, thank Luke. That got like 400 odd times on the Facebook page. So I thought I'd better include it. Sam Parfitt, this is from him. Hello to you, Sam. He says, "Jenna's assistant manager crying on the bench when his son scored a double."
Oh, that's beautiful.
Sam says it takes him back to when he scored his first Sunday league goal age 14, and his dad missed it due to being in the car because it was raining.
Oh, did it really take him back to that?
I'd like to think that Sam's never scored a goal since.
Yeah.
And finally, this is from Devang Nishore. Hello to you, Devang. He says, "Good old Neil Warnock in the news commenting about Marco Asensio's shaving incident and how shaving affects him personally. Quote, I don't have hairs hardly anywhere. My daughter can't believe how smooth I am."
Bizarre.
I don't think there's no way of following that, is there? So
no.
I thought I'd leave that at the end.
Just let that hang.
There's a man who needs to grip himself a Villa in the alcohol.
Yeah, DG.
My highlight of the weekend, perhaps, was the two goals Bournemouth scored. Jordan Ibe with the sets up. It was the first one's delightful, and Defoe's finish was very nice indeed. Yeah, I did enjoy that. Well,
my highlight of the weekend would be Brett Pittman scoring two goals for Portsmouth and a good win. The first goal, he headed from close range, the defender booted him in the face, and if you watched a replay, you can actually see the blood exploding from his nose.
Should have been a red card.
Broken nose. Well, there you go. No, Brett had his head very, very low.
Okay.
But he didn't let it affect him. He scored an absolute worldie after that.
Amazing.
To make it two. Joint top scorer in League One at the moment, as predicted by me. So not all my predictions are terrible. Just most of them.
I see. Pompey on the march.
They are a bit. No, they're not. They've got no consistency. They're almost on the march. Oh, let's have a rest. Let's set up a tent at the side of the road, rock back on the march again. Let's have another rest.
More a hike.
Yeah, they're not getting anywhere. They're marching a bit, sort of, occasionally.
When they were up, they were up.
Yeah. Yeah. They are certainly halfway up at the moment. Neither up or down.
There we are, ladies and gentlemen. We've come to the end of the Football Ramble. Hurrah! It's been a pleasure talking to you. We will be back, of course, at the end of the week with the preview show. But it's been a pleasure, gentlemen. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right.
because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.